Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. Today I'm joined with John O'Sullivan, the founder of Changing the Game Project, author and longtime coach, to talk about culture, joy, and why relationships matter more than X's and O's in youth sports. This conversation's about helping players stay in the game longer, helping parents to step back in the right way, and helping coaches build an environment that actually develops athletes, not just results. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is John O'Sullivan. I am the founder of Changing the Game Project and host of Way of Champions podcast and author of a couple books on how we can make sports better for parents, for coaches, and for teams.
Love it. Now, I actually came across you because of a mutual connection. I don't remember which person it was because there's several people that I know that we know each other now. And I started listening to your podcast, and that's really got me listening to you. Then I started to do a deep dive, more deep dive into who you are as an individual and the work that you do. And so let's start off with what inspired you to found the Change the Game Project and start your podcast? Is it correlates with each other very directly?
So I've been in the soccer coaching world for a lot of years. And then before that, as a player, college player, and a USISL player, and then coach college, coach youth, and kind of 2011-ish, I was really burned out, and not on the coaching and not on the kids, but I was burned out on the politics and the parents and all the adults making decisions that didn't necessarily benefit the children in sports. And I stepped away from running a club and took some time and had always wanted to write a book. And so that became my first book, Changing the Game. And then realized that it's actually not that hard to write a book. It's really hard to sell a book and let people know you have a book. The publisher is like, you should start a blog. And the blog became Changing the Game Project. And so that was the heyday of blogging and Facebook reach and organic reach. And so all of a sudden the platform grew pretty quickly. And then in 2017, we decided to add the podcast to it as well, which was super cool. And that's a collaboration with my friend Jerry Lynch under his banner, which is Way of Champions. And just being able to really interview coaches and sports scientists and psychologists and authors, the best people in sports, athletes, and get into their secrets and their path and their journey. And so now I think we're 430-something episodes, and we've released one a week ever since we started. We haven't missed a week, so that's pretty cool.
I didn't realize I was listening to your podcast, and I'm pretty sure you had Tracy Leon, however you pronounce her last name. I didn't realize she was from Dallas. Mm. And listening to her talk and the things she talks about was really cool, because that was like the second episode I caught of yours. That was present, because I went back to the beginning and listening, and I was bouncing between the past and waiting for the next episode to come out. And I think that was like the second one I listened to in the current time frame, which is pretty cool.
There's a lot out there for sure. Like, we've, again, 430 something and a couple of repeat guests. But
for me, it was just finding a connection. And so yours is, I think once it comes out, that's the first one I listen to for the day. I listen to a ton of podcasts throughout the day, and I really have enjoyed it, but I'm trying to catch up. I'm about 130 of them in, and it is overwhelming trying to keep track of them all and trying to remember it all. And I think I've listened to about two or three repeated times now, just trying to capture the message.
Cool. Thank you.
Looking back on your own time as a youth athlete and a coach, what was the distinguishing factor that shaped your view in sports today, youth sports today?
There's not one thing, right? I can think back, and I was very blessed to have some incredibly talented coaches and some not so talented, right? And some who are great in one area and not another. And so that shapes you. My own dad was a coach as well. So shaped by him, just shaped by lots of different things. And I think over time, you realize that you take something from everyone, both good and bad. And so sometimes it's what I want to be, and sometimes it's what I don't want to be. But what was really interesting when I made this career pivot and started Change the Game Project was then to dive into the research of what do children want, what is effective coaching, and connect with really some of the top people in the world who are working on that area and doing the research on it. And so once I did that, it really solidified, oh, that's what it's called. That's what I liked about this coach, or that's what I liked about this coach. And so when I did that, it really helped synthesize some ideas that I had in my head. And then when I started working with Jerry Lynch, who had spent a couple decades doing team development and all this stuff, because I think sometimes when you talk about things like connection and relationships and love and things like that in coaching, people go, ah, you're just soft. Jerry had been talking about this for decades, and oh, by the way, his teams had won 39 NCAA titles. And he had the wins to back up what he talked about as well. We've had a great collaboration, him and I, just doing this work on, hey, here's the research piece of it, and here's what it looks like boots on the ground with some storied programs that are always competing for national championships or professional championships, and the coaches who truly get it, like what it takes to be successful. And coaching is a relationship business. It's not an X's and O's business. And we don't do a really good job in coaching education, teaching our young coaches that. That's what we're trying to do. with the work we do together.
There's a lot to unpack for me. Let's start off with these younger coaches and learning how to have that relationship. I feel most coaches want to have a good rapport with their players. Either I will probably say 75% of coaches I come across today here in the Metroplex that I talk to all have some unique relationship with their players. And then you have the 25% where it is just X's and O's. And there's a coach here that I will never forget having interactions with, and they coached in fear. And let me tell you, they could get the kids to do anything, but when the kids were done playing, you could just hear them saying, like, I don't want to play anymore. I don't want to play anymore. Yeah. So the relationship is so important, especially in these younger ages. And as they grow older, I have a question then. As they grow older, do you see these relationships to be more important, or does it become more business? Because as you hit the ages of 14, they become a little bit more independent adults and have their own opinions on things. And going on from that point, do you think the relationship is more critical then, or is it just a different form of a relationship?
I think they're both right. To go back to your coach who coached out of fear, again, you can compel people to action through fear, through shame, through whatever in the short term, but it's not sustainable. And then, like you said, what are you willing to compromise for performance? If all those kids quit next year, who the heck cares how many games you won? Like, you haven't done your job as a youth coach. And I think a lot of people fall into that. Well, we're just getting them ready for the next level, or we're doing that. But at the next level, the most effective coaches are fantastic at relationships. I had a friend who was coached by a Ballon d'Or winner. And he said the guy lost the locker room in a week because he was so transactional. You knew he just didn't care about the players. So you walk in with all this respect because of what you've done as a player. And then a week later, you're like, this guy doesn't give a crap about me or my career or anything like that. So why would I give a crap about him? So as players get older, the relationships change because this is now it's adult to young adult, and then it's adult to adult. When you get to the college level, a college coach is a surrogate parent, right? Hey, 4 or 5 years, please parent my child because I'm not going to be around. So of course the relationship matters. And I really think, again, we do a terrible job in coaching education. We give people all the drills and X's and O's and periodization and video breakdown and all this sort of stuff. And we talk so little about what are the keys and the tools to build better, authentic relationships with your athletes. And also, and this just opens up a whole nother can of worms, your relationship with yourself. Like your own self-awareness and what is the baggage that you're bringing to your coaching that you need to deal with so that you could be a better coach for the people you're in charge of. All this stuff is absolutely critical, and so much of it gets brushed over in 1 hour of a 60-hour course.
I think relationships are something we are learning to do throughout our whole entire lives, from our own, when you're a parent, having your own kids, to being a kid with your friends and your parents and other family members. I don't know how, I'm not trying to say coaches should see it, but I think those relationships should naturally bond. I think in our society over the years, maybe it's projected that there is the business relationship and then there's the professional business and then there's the personal, and you don't cross the two. But I think over time, there is a cross because you spend so many hours with these folks and so much time, and you have to build that rapport and that trust and not be so transactional and be more, as you talked about numerous times, being transformational. What core values do you think coaches need to have these principles and these transactions between them, if it's on a personal relationship or if it's truly out of being authentic and having a true relationship? Because I feel too many times people are unauthentic today in our society because they have to build walls. They have to build these barriers to protect themselves.
Yeah. And so let me preface it all with, obviously, your relationship with your athletes is going to be highly dependent on ages and stages and all this sort of stuff, right? And in the age of safe sport, following all the best practices and guidelines and things like that. That's really critical, right? So that these are appropriate adult relationships. Number two, I think back to my time as a young coach where I wanted to be liked more than respected. And I think that's an important thing too, is like your job as a coach is not to be your player's best friend, right? They have lots of opportunities for a best friend. Just like your job as a parent is not to be your kid's best friend. They have lots of people to be a good friend. They only have one mom and dad or whatever. It's having these healthy boundaries in the relationship, because you're going to have to say no. You're going to have to push them. You're going to have to make them feel uncomfortable in order to grow and get better. I just think it's just really critical that we're constantly reassessing and thinking about it, and how's the connection going and what's missing. And because oftentimes when a player is not performing, it's not, of course, there's times when it's a lack of technical ability or they don't understand the tactics or things like that. But more often than not, it's things like fear, like afraid of letting their teammates down or their parents down or their coach down or things like that. And if you're not consistently and intentionally addressing that, you're not going to truly get people to reach their potential. I don't know, I'm rambling here a bit, but I think it's just really important to realize that's the basis of, it's not just sports coaching, right? You're leading in any business, in the military, and whatever. And it's not about being soft. It's not about not being demanding. It's not about not having high standards. So then to answer your question, like core values, this goes back to who am I and what drives me, right? So for John O'Sullivan, and no one's values should be what John's are unless they're your values. But for me, when I'm coaching, like first and foremost, it's joy. Like we're supposed to be having fun out here. It's a sport, right? So if I'm not having fun and they're not having fun, what the heck are we doing? For me, in competitive sports, like competitiveness matters. I want you to compete. I want you to give your best effort. I want you to really, truly get after it every day. We call it win the day. For me, how we treat each other people, so call it respect or whatever, how we treat those around us as a teammate, as a representative of the organization, that's absolutely critical. That's the kind of stuff that drives me and my core values, right? Now, your core values might be different. It doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means that's what gives you energy and makes you want to show up at the field, go to work every day. But hopefully for those involved in youth, those core values are around the development, not just of performance, but moral character as well. So that the way you conduct yourself and treat yourself respects the game, respects your teammates, respects officials, opponents, all that sort of stuff. Because that's the far bigger picture than the soccer we teach.
And for me, listening to what you're saying goes back to what I harp on so much lately is culture. As a parent learning all about sports culture, I played baseball in high school and I did wrestling. I didn't think about this until someone pointed out to me until the last year. I spent most of my time in sports psychology trying to help my kids be better athletes and what they want to get done and how to help them overcome the shortcomings of being a child. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning to take the parent lens off and give them this viewpoint, trying to take the children's viewpoint on, which has been very difficult because we've been adults for so long. This, what you're talking about is the other side of this, is the culture and the values you put into it. You, from the sounds of it, your foundation for your culture starts with joy. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's where you build from. It's bringing the joy into the game, the fun into the game, and going from there. Mm-hmm. How do you balance the culture to be competitive and developing players and also striving to win? Because at the end of the day, if you're not winning, if you're at a collegiate level, college will only put up with losing for so long. If you're in a club, they'll let you go over time at the youth level. And a high school coach I know it varies state to state, and some school says just make sure the kids are having fun, and some states like we want championships, some school districts. So
I think, first of all, it's a myth to think that joy and competitiveness don't coexist, because they do. And this is a myth that's sold by people. And I get it, and parents believe this, and I get asked all the time, okay, when's it supposed to stop being fun and start being competitive? Then we don't understand what fun is, right? Fun for a young athlete doesn't mean fooling around and playing slappy clappy tag. Fun, right? Joy is organized, good coaching, knowledgeable coaches who are good communicators and good listeners, and treat them with respect. That's what the research says fun is, right? You can run a super intense, hard, challenging session where your players are being pushed and pushed and pushed. And at the end of it, God, that was hard. Can't wait to practice tomorrow. So these two things, it's such a bad myth that, oh, this isn't fun anymore. It's bullshit. And so I think that's where people, right, and parents have to demand that, and athletes demand it, right? If you run in practices and all you do is stand in line all day, no one wants that. No one's sitting there going, God, I hope we stand in line a bunch today. That'll be great. So teaching through the game and giving them advice and allowing them to make mistakes and all this sort of stuff, that's still competing. The other big myth is like that you can actually teach winning, right? You can't teach winning. There's no such thing. If there was some secret of how to teach winning, we'd all do it, right? What we can teach is competing. How do I set my team and my players up to compete their very best? And competing is about, what do I control? I control my sleep, my effort, my nutrition, my preparation, all this sort of stuff. That's what I control. And what I don't control is the referee, the field, the opponent's parents, all that sort of stuff. I don't control any of that stuff, right? So I want to focus on what belongs to me so that I can compete my very best. And on the day, maybe the other team's better. Maybe they're not. And that's what we have, right? And I don't want to just do that on game day. I want to do that every day. And I want to do that 6 months before the season when I'm in the weight room. And all that sort of stuff. And if we get that little bit better, we win the day and we win the day and we win the day and we win the day, that's the best chance we're going to have to compete. So, yeah, joy always. I don't care. Show me a team that plays with joy, and even in high pressure situations, and I'll show you a team that probably wins more often than loses.
I was taught by my father at a very young age, you can always find joy in everything you're doing, even digging a ditch. I always tell my son, it's like, I've only had one job I ever disliked, and it was a dishwasher in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because I didn't like the work. It was, I was working 20-hour days back to back to back to back, and with no relief and no one stepping up and handling. If someone was in my corner fighting for me, saying he needs a day off mm-hmm. after working, or he needs to come in 12 hours after he leaves work so he can sleep, I think I might have probably still be washing dishes for all I know. You find the happiness in what you're doing. I think I can only relate to my daughter and my son. My daughter does gymnastics, and she just got moved up to they call it pre-competitive team to see if they can handle the extra going from, 3 hours a week to 8 hours. And my daughter's enthusiasm has gone through the roof. As she's off this whole week from gymnastics, and she has spent probably 2-3 hours a day on her own doing her stuff. My son's coach, at the beginning of the new season, he has two coaches this season. And the excitement he has coming into the season, he touches the ball even more. I have to remind him to do anything. He just does it on his own. It's because even though the training sessions are hard and he's tired afterwards, he still wants to go play.
And that's intrinsic motivation. And so if you talk to researchers in sports science, what does it take? They'd say three components, right? Number one is enjoyment, joy in the task. Number two is autonomy. So they own it, like your kids, right? You're not going, get down on that floor and stretch or whatever. She's doing it on her own. Your son realizes, hey, I like this and I want to get better. Therefore, I need to go to the kickback wall, or I need to work on this, right? So it's the joy in those, the autonomy, and then those two things breed intrinsic motivation to get better. And that's the path to mastery right there, right? But if you take away the ownership or you take away the joy, the intrinsic motivation fades, and pretty soon people just, they quit, they walk away.
I think it's hard for parents to understand. I've been guilty of it myself when my son was younger. He's 11 now. And when he was younger, go do these drills that you're told to go do. You're not allowed to do anything until you do them. Now it's, well, but if this is your goal, when you're going to go do it, I'm not going to harp on you every single day. I will help remind you, but I will not tell you you need to go do it. It's not my job.
I just had, sorry to interrupt. So I have two kids in college, and it's early morning here when we're recording this, and I had this guy, the HVAC company came to service my furnace this morning. He just said, I got to tell you, I always worry in the summer about early morning visits to people with college age kids because I don't want to wake the kids up when I'm banging around. Your two kids are like up and at them, right? And he was here at my house at 8 a.m. My son left for the gym at 7 a.m. by himself, right, on his own. And my daughter was going surfing, right? No one's begging them to do those things, right? And if they wanted to sleep in, they could sleep in. But that's their choice. That's their path. And that happened not because I said, go to the gym, go to the gym, go to the gym. It's because I said, if you want X, then you need to do Y. But that's up to you, because I don't – if your goal is this – then there's certain things to achieve that goal or change your goal. That's fine.
I think we as parents get stuck on our own goals or our own ambitions for our kids. This is a common conversation I've been having the last several days, it seems, with friends. It is, when do we change? When do we pivot from our own personal goals of pushing them on our kids to our kids? And I think the interview I did yesterday, this is something we talked about. It was, how do we become the passenger in our kids' journey versus their, and Travis Dorsch very well pointed out to me, saying we can't be snowplow parents. We need to be parents that are in the passenger seat with them, listening to why they want to push everything out of the way to get where they want to get, instead of us clearing the path and not letting them get hurt, not letting them have failure. Is that they need to experience it, but we just need to be there to support it. And how do we step back? I think as they get older, we do a better job, but the younger ages, we don't want our kids to fail, because I think no parent wants their kids to fail, but it's part of life. Failure, learning to accept failure at a young age is so critical. I think maybe that's why I don't let my kids win. I don't know. They have to naturally win.
Yeah, I think it's different when you're playing basketball against them and swatting every shot, or if you do jujitsu and you're hurting them, that's not really, I won, see, I kicked your ass.
Enjoyment.
Like, that's not it. But yeah, or earn it, right? The first time my son beat me in golf, like, he beat me in golf. It wasn't like I wasn't trying. I think all these sort of things, like, they come together in such an important way. And you're guiding your kids. Like, there's a difference between goals and expectations, right?
Yes.
So my expectations for my kids can be, work hard, right? Be respectful to your coaches, officials, teammates. I can expect that because you control that, right? And that just plays well in life. But I can't expect my kids to play in college. I can't expect my kids to love a sport that I love as much as I do. That's a goal. So a goal is one thing, but an expectation is something different. I think when people turn things that are goals, get a college scholarship, into an expectation, that's when they start taking ownership and saying, you have to do this and this. Now, on the flip side of that, as a parent, you have every right to say, listen, this gymnastics academy you're a part of is costs a lot of money and a lot of time. And so therefore, if you want us to invest that, then that's your commitment to it as well. If you don't, no problem. There's other places you can go do tumbling that cost less and whatever. And that's great too. But when you sign up for a certain thing, we're committing, I'm committing to support your journey financially, time-wise, drive you here, do all that sort of stuff. So you have something that you have to commit to it as well. But if we're going to do all this and all you're going to do is show up and practice 3 days a week, there's other places to do that where we can save a bunch of time and money.
We have this conversation with my 11-year-old son about every January and every July. I don't know why it's about that time frame, or May, I think it rolls around. And as parents, it's like, we don't care that you don't want to play soccer. You're going to do an activity.
Yeah.
We don't care that you play at a high level. We don't care for this. But if you're not going to put the effort in, we're going to pull back our commitment level to it also.
Right.
Because it's hard. I'm just waiting for the day it clicks for my son. My daughter, I think she gets it, and she's 7. My son's 11. And I think it's part of being a COVID child, always has to be entertained and always has to be doing something with someone else. Because when we were home during COVID for kindergarten and whatnot here in Texas, he learned that he always had a playmate, mm-hmm. and we could always go do something. Mm-hmm. Where my daughter is just very self-efficient and wasn't part of that. And I'm starting to see this trend with a lot of kids that doubt were on that same age group deal with the same issue, is that they are not self-motivated. They want to play with someone else to get things done. Mm-hmm. And I think me as a parent, I'm at fault for it because I fed into it and played with them because I was home. I had time, and we'd lost the structure of self-efficiency and self-standards and efficient, where my daughter has always been the type to go off on her own and do her own thing, play with her dolls by herself. Every now and then she'll ask us to play with her, but it's not like my son where everything is with each other. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just maybe I messed up as the first child issue or a COVID issue, but I look at it from a COVID because I see a lot of kids that his age that have gone through COVID have similar issues when it comes to training on their own or doing activities on their own. It's they want to be with someone.
Interesting. Yeah. Since my kids were older, I didn't experience that, but certainly the therapists and the psychologists that I've talked to says that's the tough age group. Like the age group where you are just finding your autonomy, like outside of sometimes your family unit, and then you got pulled back into it. It was a really hard time. Whereas like your daughter, who at that time was 3 or 4, it's still family. And my kids were 13, 14. They had moved out into a friend group. But it's those kids who are in that transition phase that I think have struggled the most with that period of isolation, no school, things like that, however long it is. So I would say that your experience is not atypical from what I've heard.
And so, but it also comes back to this most self-motivation and all this other stuff. I think we're going to see either a dip in the 2013, 2014, 2015 age group with high level successful athletes. I could be wrong. We'll find out in about 10 years from now if this is true.
The U.S. is the U.S., right? Like where our whole system is throw 100 eggs against the wall and hope one doesn't crack. We have such huge numbers that even if there is a dip, it'll probably be harder to notice if we're just looking at the top level of sport, right? If you're Iceland and you have 300,000 people and that happened, you will notice the difference.
And that's the thing. I just think it's interesting. Like this is the fun side of this stuff as a parent, learning all about it. It's deep diving into our kids. And as the kids who are older, and I've talked to several parents that have older kids than my son that are either graduating high school or went to high school or were in college, and they all said if they didn't have the self-discipline, the self-motivation, they wouldn't be where they're at today. And it's very fascinating how that all plays into effect. And it comes back to what you talked about, that joy. Mm-hmm. If they can just find the foundation of joy and the coaches they have to have that joy into this. So that being said, how do we cultivate or have coaches have this internal drive? Is there a way that we can prep our athletes from a younger age to even older kids when they're learning to have these things, like become when they become more self-aware and on their own, so to speak, as in their teenager years? Is there a way to teach them to be more motivated and to have love for sports? Not just I speak soccer, but sports in general.
I think first of all, realizing it's not some like straight trajectory, right? It always ebbs and flows, your enjoyment and different teammates, different coaches, injuries, success of the team, role, positions. There's so many factors that go into that. So number one, not worrying that your 12-year-old who has just played 4 years straight of soccer with nothing else all of a sudden says, I need a break. There's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with your kid. So I think that's part of it, is that it's this up and down and whatever. And as the parent, you're constantly letting go, giving them more ownership. As a coach, another big coaching issue is that we joystick our kids around. Kids are intelligent. They can figure it out. You go watch kids play in Spain and their understanding of the game because they watch it or whatever, but their movement and their ability to exploit space and understand space and time and things like that is really high. And you mean American coach, now my kids could never do that. Why? Because their passport says USA on it? No, it's because you're not creating an environment that allows it to happen. And so I think it's this constant like letting go, and then when they fail, when they screw up, being like, okay, what's good? What did we learn in this moment? Why is this a good thing? How do you get better? And then that teaches kids that doing hard things doesn't come easily. They live in this era where all the answers are right in the palm of their hand and everything happens quickly. And so sport is this one thing where you can't shortcut it. There is no AI solution to getting better at soccer. You got to put in the work. And so we're using sport to teach our kids to do hard things so that when they have things outside of sport, they're like, oh, yeah, I know how to do hard things. That's why businesses like to hire former athletes, because they understand what the discipline and time on task and receiving feedback and all that sort of stuff. That's what it takes to be good at something.
Today's conversation with John really centered on one core idea, that coaching is a relationship business, not a tactic business. We talk about why fear-based coaching might create short-term compliance, but fails athletes in the long run, why joy and competition aren't opposites, and how culture, not system or drills, is what sustains development over time. John also challenges the idea that winning can be taught, emphasizing instead that the importance of teaching athletes how to compete, take ownership, and stay self-motivated within. This episode is a reminder that if we want to better outcomes in youth sports, we have to start by changing how adults show up as parents, coaches, and leaders. Big thanks to John for joining me today.
If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.